Hello and welcome to episode 88 of the Blue Cup Tools podcast. I am Francisco Gonzalez, also known as Grunislav, and with me, enjoying a frozen treat.
Hello, my name is Ben Threefour, also known as Ben Chandler. I did that in a different order to usual, but my Zupa Duper has messed me up, so. hello, how are you? Hi, how are you?
I'm doing alright, how are you, Ben?
I'm very good. It's been a warm day.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying my frozen treat and playing good. Some Disco Zoo, so life's good.
Some Disco Zoo?
Yeah.
What's Disco Zoo?
I'll talk about it in the what we've been playing section.
Okay.
It's a good spot for it, I think.
That's good. That's good. Well, how have you been, generally speaking? You know, I have to, before we start, I have to give a little shout out and also a little scolding to our friends Brian and Bianca over at the Square Waves FM podcast. I was listening to their latest episode, and they... First of all, I appreciate the fact that they've reformatted their podcast so that it's no longer 3 hours long. It's now about an hour and a half, which is a much more
manageable...
Those
things are marathons. You have to set aside half your day to listen to them.
Yeah, it's a much more manageable listening length now, so thanks for that, guys. But they were talking the other day about nostalgia and things, and they commented on how it took them a while to get to what they were talking about, and they said that they were disorganized, but they were like, well, we're not as disorganized as the Blue Cup Tools podcast, at least. And I was like, wait a minute. We're organized. We have a structure. We have a format. We talk about stuff, and then we talk about what we've been playing, and then we talk about our topic. We may go on tangents. But whatever, I'm really not mad. I like their podcast, and I like them.
I have a Zupa Duper Disco Zoo. I don't give a shit what anybody says about us. I'm happy.
Good, good. Anyway, how are you doing, Ben?
I'm good.
Aside from having your Zupa Duper, what have you been up to? You've been playing more country music. What's that all about?
Yeah, I've been learning more country music, which means lots of guitar practice. You know, just trying to make sure every single note comes out spot on. Get the bends right and everything like that. It's all simple music to play, but when you're learning 15 songs and you want to get them note for note spot on and you've only got a month, it's just time. It's not difficult. It's just putting the time in.
So here's a completely random question that I've never asked you. Have you been ever interested in scuba diving?
A little bit, but you have to do courses.
Yeah,
so
no, of
I
course.
Believe. I haven't like set aside because I love snorkeling. You know, you've been snorkeling.
Yeah, no, I enjoy snorkeling too. It's fun. No, I mean, you know, classes and stuff aside, do you obviously that's all part of it. But I mean,
I would like to go. I really love the underwater. You know, as you know,
I used to
if I'm at the beach, I want to be underneath the waves.
Yeah, I used to work with a lady, she was one of the translators at the office that I used to work at, and she was really big into scuba diving, and when I told her I was going to Australia, she pretty much, like, shook me in jealousy and was like, oh my god, I've always wanted to go there because I want to snorkel, or scuba dive the Great Barrier Reef and everything, and I was like, calm down.
Well,
and you reminded
me. It's I don't know, it's such a mysterious setting for me. Even, like, as you know, I love, like, games set underwater. I mean, you bought me like a Median Dynasty.
I did,
and
yes.
I love those sort of settings. It's just so mysterious to me, and like the sensation. I don't know. For me, it's better having an underwater game than having a space game, even if they control exactly the same. I'm like,
well, they're very similar in a lot of ways, as far as like the void and the unknown and all that.
There's other things like
the big scary creatures that can come out of nowhere and gulp you down in one bite.
Yeah, in Aquanox.
Well, I meant in real life.
Oh, no. I've never been gulped down in one bite in real life. Obviously, I'm still here.
That's true. You saying the bends is what reminded me.
It's this really mysterious setting, and the sound's muted, and like, you know, I don't know. There's just this. I have this real fascination with it, I guess I'd say.
Where was it went that there was... It was in Exmouth, wasn't it? That the whole big draw was like, hey, you can scuba dive with the whale sharks.
I don't know if you could actually scuba dive with them, but you could go on, like, the boats. But they were really expensive.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's tourist stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway.
But, I mean...
We got to see
some interesting animals.
Yeah. No, we did see a lot of interesting wildlife. But I just went on a rant about Brian and Bianca saying we're disorganized, and I immediately went off on a tangent, so... Go me. Anyway, what else have you been up to?
I've been working.
It's not scuba diving. Yeah, good.
I finished my work on the shard light, so that's
you
nice.
Did. Yeah.
I mean, I probably had finished it last time in podcast, but now I've done all the trading cards and everything. Right. So that's it. I'm out. I'm full-time and unavowed.
You're out. Moment.
Yeah. So that's been good. You know, it's always cool being on a new project. And,
sure, yeah.
And being that I'm learning new stuff, it's pretty intense, but I like a challenge.
Hmm. Well, good.
Yeah, what about you? You went to the Playcrafting show last night.
Yeah, I did. They had their winter expo. It was good. It was good. I got a much better space this time, and I actually
yeah, it looked like you had a fair bit of room.
Yeah, I actually I carved out a little space because there was these three chairs up against the corner whiteboard, and the reason I went there was because there was an electrical outlet close by, and the place I had originally set up didn't have one, so I ran over there and put up my poster, and I wrote a post-cataclysmic point-and-click adventure up on the whiteboard, and yeah, it was good. We had a continuous stream. There was never a moment where there was no one playing for more than like a minute or two, and lots of people complimented the art, so well done. And a few people complimented the story and the writing, so I pat myself on the back there. And and yeah, it was good. I got to meet in person Robert Adams from Tech Raptor, who interviewed me for that very kind write-up that they did a while back. So that was cool. He had trouble finding me last time. So yeah,
you're like a mythical creature.
I guess. Not really.
I found a mythical creature. I found a griffin in Disco Zoo, so.
Oh, okay.
That was
head. I'm like a wee little leprechaun that you must find by finding the green shard.
Yeah, you actually are.
Shirt. Well, I'm not that small, but yeah.
But you, I mean, you hid in the back of someone's car once as a leprechaun, remember?
Did I? Probably. Anyway, but yeah, I had to speak a lot, and afterwards there was a little after party, and the music was real loud, so I had to kind of shout to talk. So that's why I'm a little hoarse sounding and weird sounding today.
I have horses in Disco. I have 12 of them.
Okay, good.
And one of them is wearing a hat yet, but I could change that if I so chose.
I see. Aside from that, I had a birthday last week. I turned 34, and I got
happy
a really
birthday.
Thank you. You were very kind and told me that on the day. And I got a red velvet cake, which was huge and amazing.
No, the past tense.
I still have some slices in the freezer.
It's funny because you said to me, "I'm going to have cake for months."
Yeah, because it seemed like a lot of food.
And I said, "That is absolute nonsense."
Listen.
I'm listening. That's the whole point of a podcast. It's a dialogue. There's two of us.
You know well and good how I like hyperbole. You know, you don't have to crush my dreams of lying to myself and thinking that I'll be able to self-control and not eat all the cake soon.
Mm.
So there's that. And I also went out and got ice cream last Friday, which was great because we had a blizzard over the weekend last weekend. And
was that your sort of immunization for the blizzard? Like, if I put some cold in me now, I'll be tough to it.
Yeah, basically. Well, no, I just really like ice cream. So,
yeah, that's fair.
And also, it was a dual purpose because, you know, Jess, as you know, probably, is one of the co-chairs of the IGDA chapter here in New York, and
I saw a photo of the meeting or something the other day.
Yeah, they had a meeting last week, too. And one of the things that they want to do is, you know, in addition to having, like, the monthly drink-ups and stuff, they want to do something that's more social and not as alcoholic for people who don't drink or for people who are not 21. So they want to do an ice cream and coffee social. So part of that involves scouting locations. And so we went to this place called Van Luyn in the East Village, and I had a sundae, and it was a scoop of chocolate, a scoop of vanilla, and a scoop of strawberry with whipped cream and hot fudge, and it was delicious. And a cherry on top, of course. So, yes.
I took some people out for ice cream after the Perth Games Expo. That
oh,
was
yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that's right. Didn't you take Macca?
I did. And Darth, and Little Darth.
Oh, nice. Good. Ice cream is nice.
Yeah, it's just, especially because it was, you know, the hot is hot here for a long time, so yeah. It's pretty reliable that the weather's going to suit.
Ice cream is good in any weather, I'll argue.
Yeah, but it's more enjoyable in the when you got a cold treat on a hot day.
I mean, yeah, sure, it's refreshing in that sense. But I used to be one of these people that was like, oh, it's cold outside, I shouldn't eat ice cream. But now it doesn't really matter.
I don't allow ice creams, I don't allow temperature to dictate whether I'm going to eat it or not.
All right, well, good, because I used to.
I just enjoy it more when it's hot.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's pretty much what I've been up to. Oh, and yeah, I haven't finished Shard Light, but it's close. So just a couple of more things, but I've already started full stop into my next project. And I sent my design document to Dave for him to have a look at a couple of days ago. So yeah, we have a release date for Shard Light. I just have to put in some stuff.
Been announced yet? Because everyone's asking me, and I'm like, oh, I don't know if I'm allowed to tell anybody yet.
It hasn't. I'll tell you about that after we finish recording. So,
okay.
But, no.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't bother me. I just say to people, oh, yes, soon, and give them a rough idea.
I mean, the Steam page is up already, so, you know, if you have Google, whatever. But anyway, or even just Steam. But anyway, so...
Yeah, I mean, I can always tell them, like, I can remember who they are and go, when it comes out, go, hey, by the way, it's out. Get it.
Yeah.
So, that doesn't... There's no concern. I was just curious.
Mm-hmm. Right, so yeah, that's good. What have you been playing?
I've been playing a few different things. Disco Zoo, obviously.
Oh, really? I had no idea. Tell me more.
It's a telephone game.
Yes.
Does anyone call them telephones anymore?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Anyway, it's a telephone game.
It's a text box game.
Basically, you have a zoo, and you go out into the wild and rescue animals for coins. It costs money to go on these expeditions to rescue them, and the rescue is basically single-player battleship.
Okay.
Where you have to remember the shapes of the animals, and you find an animal, and you've got so many chances. And, like, you know, so once you've learnt the shape of an animal, you can go, oh, well, it's like Battleship. You go, all right, well, it's going to be shaped like this. So, you know, and as you go along, there's different things. And then you start with simple farm animals, and then you get Australian outback animals, and I'm up to, like, African savannah animals. So, you know, you unlock different stuff. You earn coins.
Have you found your animals any rhinos? Are awake,
they earn you coins. It's a shameless, time-wasting mobile game, I love it.
Have you found any rhinos yet?
There are no rhinos, I don't believe.
How about elephants?
There's griffins and there's unicorns.
Oh, that's shit. I want elephants and rhinos. Those are two of my favorite animals.
There's elephants. Okay. There's elephants.
All right, good.
And there's hippopotamuses.
Oh, hippos are all right.
Mm.
But I like rhinos. No rhinos. They look like triceratops, but without the fan heads.
Well, I believe there's dinosaurs later on, so maybe they have triceratopses.
Whatever. All right, fair enough. This doesn't sound like a game for me. I'd get too picky about it. Anyway, please continue.
Dude, sometimes you just have to relax and enjoy a game.
I know.
Even if it doesn't have your number one favorite animal. But yeah, I've never seen the disco part of Disco Zoo because you have to spend things to get that, and I want to spend the things on hats to put on the crocodiles. I've got a lot of crocodiles and I need them to all wear hats.
Are any of them embarrassed?
They're all embarrassed. They're wearing hats.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so that's good.
Yeah.
I just got a note on my phone that my hippos have fallen asleep.
Is this one of those?
My phone tells me.
Yeah,
my phone tells me the important things only now.
This is one of those real time ones, isn't it?
Yeah, I played.
I used to play Zombie Farm, and Zombie Farm used to send me push notifications for like when my tomatoes were finished, ready for harvesting.
Zombie Farm grows tomatoes.
Well, yeah, you grew crops and you also grew zombies. It was great. And it was so stupid, and they used to wander around going, brains, brains, brains. It was such a dumb game.
Why do you grow tomatoes as well as zombies?
Because you have to farm crops for money, for coins.
And why do you grow the zombies?
So you can attack the rival farmers and eat them.
Oh my god, that's horrible. That's not how... That's not how agriculture works.
That's how zombie agriculture works.
But yeah,
I used to play this game a lot back in like 2009, 2010. It was great.
Mm.
Anyway,
okay. It's got this little bus in the parking lot. It's a really cute thing. It's fun to watch the animals like hop around and make stupid noises. They make all sorts of stupid sounds. One of my crocodiles croaked. I think he thinks he's a frog.
Does this game have microtransactions?
Yeah, probably, but I haven't done any of that stuff. I'm not going to spend any money on it. I'm just going to laugh at the cute little graphics.
Well, that's good. That's good.
But yeah, there's a little bus that in the parking lot there. If you tap on three times, it launches the Flappy Bird clone where it's like, the animals have got in the funky bus, but they don't know how to drive. Now you have to safely get them down the highway.
Oh my God.
So it's basically Flappy Bird, but you're in a bus full of party animals. In a funky bus full of party animals.
Are they wearing party hats?
I don't know, you can't see them. It's just a little teeny bus on a very, very, very crowded freeway.
What a wasted opportunity.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's Disco Zoo. Okay.
Sounds delightful.
It's really cute. It's really fun. It's a total waste of time, but I don't care.
Well, that's mobile games in a nutshell, isn't it?
Yeah. It's dumb. I also played The Slaughter Act 1, which has just been released on Steam.
Yeah, that's on my list.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked it. It's, you know, I want to say it's a few hours long. It's somewhere between 2 and 3 hours long. It's a point and click adventure set in, with like pixelated graphics set around the Jack the Ripper murders. And it's got a little bit of supernatural stuff going on to sort of make things a little bit more surreal and make you question stuff. It's definitely ends with a cliffhanger, but I mean, it's Act 1, so you know there's more coming. But I thought it was really well done. It was fun to solve the puzzles. There's a game where you have to slide pennies. I think it's Push Halfpenny or Shove Halfpenny or something. You have to slide these pennies. I think that I am the worst player in the world at. Ivan Ulyanov beat it on the first go.
Well, Ivan Ulyanov has some special skills.
Yeah, he's good at everything, damn him. But, like, yeah, I was woefully bad at this game. And when I finally beat it, the game glitched out because I played a pre-release version of it. Mm. And, like, I had to do it all over again. And I just... But other than that, I really enjoyed it. And, yeah, it's really good. So if you like investigative mysteries where you play a detective...
I do.
And, like, yeah, it's good. It's worth checking out. And it's lighthearted enough that it doesn't, like... You get these 3D... adventures where it's like, oh, the murder things, and they take themselves so seriously, and it comes off as so stiff and wooden that I can't get into it. But this was quite fun and quite enjoyable.
Mm.
So that was, it had a bit of life in it, you know.
Good.
While still being pretty dark and gruesome.
Yeah.
I played The Order of the Thorn, The King's Challenge. Toot. A new adventure, a brand new adventure by Infamous Quests, who did Quest for Infamy.
That's also on my list.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's like, it really feels and looks and even, you know, sounds like a tribute to King's Quest 5 and 6.
Hmm.
And Quest for Glory 1 VGA.
Mm-hmm.
With some direct lifts, you know, there's one point where you get to, like, Arana's piece, except it's got, you know, the tree looks different. And,
yeah,
you know,
I've seen
but
that.
You're like,
I've
and,
seen
but
that
you're
screenshot.
Like, yeah, I know what this is. Like, let's not.
Yeah.
But it felt a lot to me, like, the first part of King's Quest 5 without the desert. Before you get into the snowy mountains bit, it felt like all of that. If you cut the desert off without the annoying deaths, without the annoying owl, without the annoying dead ends. So, you know.
What about the annoying singing?
Is there any singing? No, you play as a bard, but you only play the music. There's no actual singing, so that's good.
Well, I mean, singing can be done well. I'm just talking about King's Quest V has those annoying ant song, that annoying ant song.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah,
well, for good reason.
Lucky.
But yeah, no, it hasn't got any of that nonsense. It's half of about half the puzzles you solve with inventory combinations, and about half of them you solve by playing the right song in the right place at the right time. And you know, I really thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, good.
One thing I thought was nice about it is you can, like, click on the thing. It's more complicated than the staff in Loom. It's, like, you've got a bunch of strings, you know, with a bunch of frets. So there's a few different things, but if you don't want to do any of that, you can take it off hard mode and it does the songs for you. But I just, I mean, how hard is it to memorize a pattern and click it? So I just did it like that. Just to do it properly. And I really enjoyed it. It's about just under 3 hours it took me. But a few other people that have been playing it that I recommended it to, it's taken them a bit longer than that. So,
okay.
I don't know if I got lucky or what. But yeah, it's definitely a part one. Again, like the Slaughter.
Right.
You definitely like, okay, there's something else coming here, but they're already working on part two. I've seen bits and pieces.
Yeah, they've got a part three in waiting, so.
Yeah, so if you like King's Quest 5 or 6, like if that's the sort of thing that you really like,
mm-hmm.
and you want to have something that feels a lot like that without the deaths, you know, without the stuff that makes King's Quest 5 really, really annoying to play,
mm-hmm.
there's still a bit of wandering around waiting for stuff to happen, but I honestly didn't mind that. Mm. I can forgive that.
Okay.
I really liked the fact that there was another sort of wander around the forest adventure game, because I really love that just wandering around a forest, exploring. That really, really, really appeals to me.
Mm.
So, I was actually kind of, like, when I finished it, I was kind of sad. I was like, oh, man. Because I finished it the night it came out. Like, wow. I sat there and finished the damn thing. It's like, I want to be the hero. I want to solve the king's challenge. No, I genuinely was invested in it.
Well, good. That's a good sign.
Yeah. Yeah, and I had such a great time. So, thanks to those guys.
I've actually backed it on
Kickstarter.
Oh, good.
Was that sorry?
I said, but you don't have to take my word for it. It's a reference to Reading Rainbow. You didn't get that in Australia, don't worry.
No. No. I'd backed it, so I've been waiting for this one for quite a while. And it was really, really, really rewarding, even for someone that never played King's Quest back in the day.
Mm. Yeah, but you have since played King's Quest 5 and 6.
I mean, I'm not clouded by the nostalgia that some people seem clouded by when they're like, oh, King's Quest 5 was so great. I'm like... Yeah. But, you know, like there were elements of King's Quest 5 that I really, really liked. But this basically keeps it... The art's not quite... Like, the background art isn't quite the same skill level, but King's Quest 5 is extremely pretty, in my opinion. So, yeah, you
sure.
know.
Sure.
They get very close for mm-hmm. what it's worth. They get very, very close.
Mm.
And, I don't know what else to say, but I really liked it. I think there was another game. Oh, yeah. What was it called? I just finished it last night. I'm just Googling it because I don't want to give people the wrong information. But I just finished it. So that one took me about 3 hours. The Slaughter Act one took me somewhere between 2 and 3 hours. And this one's Hero of the Kingdom, it's called.
Mm.
And this is sort of an adventure game, but not really. Sort of like a hidden object adventure something. I really don't know. It's like a busy game. But this one took me 2.5 hours. I've been playing a lot of really small games.
And
it's basically...
Oh, go ahead. I'll talk about that later.
It's basically... yeah, you just explore and you uncover more of this land, and you're basically doing fetch quests, but I didn't mind it. It was fun enough for what it was worth, and, like, it's set up in such a way whereas, like, when you run out of money, you can go and harvest mushrooms and go and harvest this and go and, you know, it's busy work, but it's cute, it's got nice graphics, and it was fun enough to play through for a couple of dollars. It didn't cost much. I got it on sale, so...
Good.
You know. And the other thing I was playing is, after work tonight, I've been playing a bit of Alien Rampage, because I saw Anatoly tweeting about it the other day. I'm like, I haven't played Alien Rampage for ages. Mm-hmm. So I found my old CD,
mm-hmm.
and I put it into my old Pentium, loaded it up, and I played the first episode of that.
Sorry to interrupt you, but what you just say, me old Pentium, makes me think of that old Cockney phrase, me old China, but... It sounds funny, like you'd call that someone as like a term of endearment. Hey, how you doing, me old Pentium?
All right then, Pentium. Yeah. How you doing there, bruv?
It's a new
thing around these parts for quite some time now.
If you ever made like a like fax punk steampunk game, you could have that as part of the vernacular.
It would be pretty funny.
Anyway, you were saying.
But yeah, I remembered certain parts being really tough, and somehow I got through them really easily, and other parts that I didn't remember being tough, like, I stumbled a bit on. So, I remember the first boss fight, like, at the end of the first episode being really, really hard, and I got it in 2 goes or 3 goes or something this time.
Hmm.
So,
okay.
It obviously isn't that hard, because I'm not that good at platformers.
Hmm.
So yeah, but it's a great game. It never seemed to like. It never seemed to sort of get that much attention. I played it on some computer magazine like cover disc, the demo, as a kid, and I finished the demo. I was like, oh, that was great. And then my brother deleted it, and I forgot what it was called. Mm-hmm. And like, I didn't hear about it for ages. And then a few years ago, I found it again. I'm like, oh, this is the game. So I grabbed it. And it's pretty hard to find on eBay, or it was back then, I think, since someone unearthed a few copies. But yeah, it's like a side scroller shoot 'em up, but it's like it's not like a fast paced one like Metal Slug. It's a really it rewards you if you take your time and do stuff like that.
So. That's good.
Yeah, but it's well animated, like really really well animated. I love the animation. You know, like the animation in Blackthorn.
Oh yeah, sure. Sort of.
Rotoscoped. It's a bit like that. Yes, yeah, I don't think this is rotoscope, but it's that sort of smoothness.
Right.
So you know. A lot of those games had, like you know, Another World, Prince of Persia. They had that really smooth animation style. This has got that as well.
Right. Well, Prince of Persia was rotoscoped.
Without ever feeling like
Out of
heavy.
This World was vectors, if I'm not mistaken.
What's that, sorry?
The Prince of Persia was rotoscoped, and Out of This World or Another World was vectors.
Yeah, but it was vectors over rotoscope.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, he rotoscoped, I think. Yeah. And, yeah,
at
all
least
those
the
games
intro,
sort of had
sure.
that sort of...
Yeah.
Sort of thing, but yeah, this is really. I've never actually finished it. It's pretty tough, but this time I'm doing a lot better than I was last time. So I'm like, oh, I'll keep playing it. Obviously, I stopped because we had a podcast to do. But
I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
You can get back to it later.
I sort of one episode was enough. You know, I was happy.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Anyway, that's what I've been playing. What have you been playing?
I've been playing a few things. I finished Bloodborne, and when I say I finished Bloodborne, I mean I finished the DLC, and I went back and I platinumed it, because I want to get rid of it, because my PlayStation...
I have a question. Did you have to look up any guides?
Oh, I played that whole game with guides, because I needed to find the best strategies to fight the bosses, because those bosses are hard, especially in New Game Plus mode. So, yeah.
Okay.
But I mean, I explored and stuff on my own. I just, when I would get to the bosses, I would try and fight them and try and learn their strategies. But after getting killed for like the 10th time, I would go and look up, you know, what they were weak to or what strategies I should use. So yeah.
Fair enough.
Plus my PS Plus subscription is probably going to be expired at the end of the month. So you can only play online if you have a PS Plus account. So I was trying to take advantage and co-op with Drew a little bit, and he helped me out, and I helped him out, and so it was good. So yeah, right. So I finished that. I played Sherlock Holmes Crimes and Punishments again. I did my.
Yep.
I've been wanting to play it and get everything completely wrong just to see.
How You've been talking reacted. About it for quite a while, yeah.
I have. So I finally sat down and did that last weekend, and I am disappointed to say that aside from a couple of minor differences, there really isn't any. Change to the game if you get everything wrong. Like, I got everything really wrong. Like, I accused... Most of the cases have, like, three suspects that you can choose from, and I would always accuse the one that was completely the obvious wrong one. And the main thing that it changed was there's this subplot going on in the back of the game about this, like, anarchist group, and like Mycroft steps in and asks you to help at the very end, and you have to make another moral choice at the end. That didn't happen because, you know, whatever. And aside from that, like, you know, between cases, if you solve the case, you get to look at his correspondence and you find that there's like newspaper articles about how well he did. Well, I got a bunch of angry letters from like relatives of the wrongly accused saying, you're a horrible man, how could you? But
that's cute.
Yeah, but aside from that, yeah, nothing. Oh, and also the end credit sequence was a very sad end credit sequence where it was just like a montage of all of the people that who got off the guilty parties being like tormented by the guilt of the murders that they committed. So that was kind of fun.
Oh man, it should have been like the guilty parties going and murdering again. Go ha ha ha! He didn't catch us.
Yeah, well, whatever. So anyway, yeah. So yeah, that was kind of disappointing, but at least I got to I mean,
so they're very different experiences credit, from Bloodborne to Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah, but to their credit, aside from that, you know, they put a lot of Frogwares really put a lot of effort into the multiple solutions and stuff in the game. So I can forgive them that, you know, because whatever. So yeah, there was that, and I played a little bit more Assassin's Creed Syndicate, but not too much. And I also played, speaking of mobile games, I was very delighted to find that a classic game that I used to have on my Sega Master System is available on iOS. So I downloaded that and I've been playing that, and that is the game called R-Type. I don't know if you've ever played that, but it's this great little...
We discussed it. You asked me directly and specifically.
I did, but now I'm asking you on the podcast so the rest of the world can know.
Oh, anyway. No, I did not play it.
Okay, well, R-Type is a side-scrolling shooter where you fly this little spaceship around these giant levels that... Well, they're actually not that big, but you fly around these levels and you shoot aliens and you get little power-ups and you fight a boss at the end of the level. And it's really, really hard. It's notorious for being really hard. I never finished it when I was a kid. I think there's 8 levels total, and I think I got as far as like level 7 once.
Okay.
But yeah, it's pretty unforgiving, and it is from like 1987, so it was one of the early like Japanese really hard games. So I guess like Bloodborne, it's, you know. So, but I used to play it on my Master System, and thinking back on it, the Sega Master System was really good, had really good graphics. Even though it was an 8-bit system like the NES, the Sega Master System's graphics were way better than the NES. They were more detailed. So that was that's been fun. Mm. And it's kind of weird playing it on an iPhone because it has two control methods. You can either use the joypad on the screen, so you actually have to press the directions, or you can drag and touch the ship and move it around. And you can also turn auto fire on or off, which helps a lot. But the thing with like dragging it is that it makes the speed power-ups pretty useless and pointless because you stay the same speed. But
right,
but no, it's been a lot of fun. Yeah, I've gotten as far as level 4, and I can't get any further just yet. So I'm clearly out of practice because I haven't played in like 20-something years. So yeah.
Well, you're out of touch, but you're not out of time to get better.
You're absolutely right, but I'm not out of my head yet, so... Because, you know... I was gonna
around.
Yeah, exactly. But I was going to say... I was going to say that... I realized I have all these huge games that I still need to finish playing, because I wanted to get Bloodborne out of the way. But I still have Assassin's Creed Syndicate to finish. I'm about 50% through that. And then
you've got Fallout 4.
I've got Fallout 4, which I just started and didn't get very far in. I only played a couple of hours. And
I still insist on calling it Fallout.
Yeah, I know. But it's intimidating. But so I figured my plan is I'm going to stagger. I'm gonna play like these short little games, you know, dedicate 2-3 hours to playing those, and then go back to playing the long ones, and not just... And, you know, take breaks from the long ones to play the short ones, and then that way I can get through my list, because otherwise it's going to take forever.
I like to do the same thing, because when I've got a big game, like, if I play a 60-hour RPG, which I played through a few of last year, by the time I get to the end of that 60-hour thing, I'm just like, I need a break. So exactly. I play a couple of small things in between. Yeah. No, I haven't even touched a big game all year.
Yeah, well, good.
Like, it's been a month, and I have not touched a big game, just because I know Torment Tides of Numenera is coming up, and, like, that's going to be 60 hours of my life gone. Yeah. So, you know, like, yeah, but it is, I agree with you. It's nice to have little breaks.
Yeah. Plus, there's a couple of other games that are coming out that I really want to check out. I really want to try The Witness. I keep hearing good things about that. And I want to check out Firewatch when that comes out soon. So
Firewatch. Oh, man. That just, everything about that game excites me.
Yeah. See, and it's funny because it seems so mundane. And what little I've seen and I've played seems really mundane, but for some reason it just does seem pretty exciting.
Yeah, but that's the thing, like, celebrating the mundane is really interesting to me.
Yeah,
like,
I know. But for all intents and purposes, there should be nothing to be excited about that game, but it's intriguing nonetheless.
Well, it looks good, and it's doing something that we haven't done before.
Yeah.
How is that not exciting?
Exactly.
New things are inherently exciting because it's like, oh.
Yeah.
This is neat.
But what I'm happy about is that I can play both The Witness and Firewatch on my PS4, so that'll be nice. So, yeah. And that's what I've been playing. I think that's everything. Yeah. Good. All
right. It sounds about right from what we've discussed.
Yes, it between does. Us. It does. Yeah. So let's move on to our topic of the week.
As suggested by Stuart Moore.
Yes, Stuart Moore. Hello, Stuart. Hello, Stuart Moore. Stuart Moore suggested this on Twitter. He asked us. I don't have it open right now, so I'm going to paraphrase. But he basically asked us to talk about what it was like to work together and how we dealt with clashes. And so, yeah, that's what we're going to talk about. So I asked you before we started how specific and how personal we should get, and you said we should get as personal as possible. So I'm going to get personal as possible. And I'm gonna bore the audience with a little bit of our history so that you can frame this in context a little bit more.
Well, I mean, I assume that a lot of our audience have heard our history evolve over the course of the podcast.
That's true, because we started doing this podcast in, what, 2012?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. So you and I started talking, I think we had spoken a couple of times in like 2010 or so. Like on IRC.
Yeah, we used to talk on
Talkbox or what Stickam was it called? Or whatever it was called.
Stickam, yeah. But Talkbox?
Talkbox and yeah. Stickam were those like group chats that we used to have with the AGS people.
Yeah, they were good. They were really formative times for me. I used to like those a lot.
Yeah, those
were remember, those good times. Do you remember those two random girls that used to just come and chat with us all the time?
Oh, yeah.
One was Siggy.
Yeah, they were in love with Arvid. Wait, was Siggy...
What was the other one?
Was Siggy Signe Rocklin?
No, I don't think so. She used to smoke a lot.
Oh, right. Siggy like cigarette.
Yeah.
I don't remember. Yeah, I vaguely remember. But I remember that there was
I randomly remembered that one of them messaged me like way later and was like, "Hey, do you remember me?" I'm like, "You never made a game. Why are you talking?"
I remember that there was one called like Yuffie Cake or something like that.
Oh, I don't.
And she used to pop scream at Arvid. No, she used to. We're reminiscing. She used to scream at Arvid and be like, "Arvid, Arvid, oh my god!" And he would go, "Hello." And then he would like play an instrument, and they would go, "Oh my god!"
He always plays an instrument.
Yeah, he always plays obscure ones. That's fun. Anyways. Right, so we had spoken a few times there, but then we kind of, you know, didn't speak for a bit. And then I played all your games in one marathon session, and I sent you a PM saying, "Oh, I really enjoyed your games," and this was back when I thought you were like this serious, philosophical Jonathan Blow type person.
A bold wizard on the mountain.
Yeah, exactly. I had a stand-up desk.
Yeah, and it was weird because, like, you'd always been making games, like, since I'd been in the forums. Like,
yeah.
As I've said, people probably remember me saying it on the podcast. Sort of Ben Jordan 6 came out when I was working on my first Megs game.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, I knew who you were and I'd played your games and I knew your work. I'd played it all. So when you messaged me, I was like, "Oh, yeah, I know this guy. I know all these games. I've played them. I know them well."
Yeah. So anyway, then after that, we kind of started talking on Skype. Because I would go out and get drunk and come home late at night, and you were the only one awake.
You used to drink a lot.
I did. I was a party animal back in my 20s.
Yeah. And I was the only I worked at Starbucks. What did you want?
Yeah. Well, actually,
being
no, I wasn't
sort of 4 in the morning.
Yeah, yeah. So
you would call me up and sing in very drunken manners to me.
I would sing David Bowie, "Rest in Peace."
You would sing all sorts of things, but yeah, there was a lot of Bowie. But
I would serenade you. How ridiculous is that? That's funny when you think about it.
And then you'd always call, like, get me the next day, and like, "Oh man, I'm so sorry." And I'm like, "Oh, I don't care. Like, whatever."
It's funny because I've had several people do that to me since, so I get to the tables have turned now. Anyway,
what goes around comes around.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, speeding up ahead. Anyway, we started talking regularly on Skype, and we decided to start doing this podcast in like mid 2012-ish.
I don't even remember how the podcast started, but you were like, "Oh, wouldn't it be terrible if we did a podcast?" And when you said, "Wouldn't it be terrible?" I'm like, he totally wants to do a podcast. He's just too shy to come out and say it.
I was too shy. Hush, hush.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
I'm letting all your secrets out.
That's fine. Yeah, it's about time the people knew the truth.
We started doing a podcast.
And somewhere along those lines, we decided that Oh, you're right. So I had this idea because I was working on a Golden
Wake. Before that, you'd actually said to me one day, like, "Oh man, would you like to work together like someday?"
Yeah, that's like, what I was getting at. I had this idea, I think, for this very germ of an idea.
This was before you had the germ of the idea for
Shardlight. Okay. I wasn't sure.
You'd actually said at one point, like, "Oh, one day we should work together on something," you know.
Yeah, because I mean, I had never really collaborated with that many people before, and
you did Little Girl in Underland,
yeah,
and you did the two Crackwell games. Is that it?
Yeah, and I had done Backdoor Man with Edmundo also.
Yeah.
So yeah, I had very little experience collaborating with people, but you know, we got along, and you and I mean, I knew that you had finished games, so I figured you were the logical person to try and make a game with, but, you know, I thought...
Yeah, we were both kind of guys that had released a bunch of games, so yeah, we sort of knew we could do it. We weren't unknown entities.
Exactly. So I was like, hey, we should work on a game together, whatever, and, you know, whatever. But then, later on down the line, I had this little germ of the idea that became Shardlight, and I talked to you about it, and it sort of became Shardlight, and we were like, "Oh, okay, let's do this." So we decided we would make Shardlight, and we started doing it. So
it was interesting because you came to me with the idea, like, "Oh yeah, I told some other people, and they didn't like it. They thought there was nothing to it. Like, they thought it was stupid."
Yeah.
But like, when we sort of discussed it, it became clear that even though what we ended up working on is nothing at all like the original idea, there's elements of that that I was like, "Oh, that's exciting. Like, we should work with that part of it."
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So,
I believe all ideas, I don't believe there's any such thing as a bad idea.
Yeah,
I just think there's ideas that fit in certain places and ideas that fit less well.
Yeah, exactly. So as a brief aside, also, around that point, in 2013, I had decided I was going to visit Australia and we were going to hang out and meet and, you know, go around and have a little adventure. And... at that point we were working on Shardlight. We came up with a bunch of brainstorming. We had some brainstorming sessions.
Two backgrounds and a character sprite.
Yeah, you had done two backgrounds and a character sprite, and we decided...
Oh, three character sprites, because you sketched out three characters and I drew them.
Right, right. So then, yeah, so we basically spent that trip, like, talking about Shardlight in our off time of having adventures. And so, yeah, then we pretty much started doing it after I finished A Golden Wake and whatever. So here's the thing. So this is what we have to talk about as far as, like, working together and clashing together. So I guess this is sort of a cautionary podcast, if you will. Just, or advice. I don't know. Aren't they? They try to be. Anyway, point is, when we were going to first hang out, I said to you, two things are either going to happen after we spend 3 weeks together. We're either going to hate each other or we're going to become best friends because, you know, even if you talk to somebody all the time online, meeting them in person is a completely different animal. And especially spending like 24/7 for 3 weeks with someone. So, you know. And then you later rectified this by saying, you know, I think that's true because I've heard... there's a famous quote by Mark Twain that says the only way to tell if you love or hate someone is to travel with them, which I think is true because, you know, I've traveled with people who I've gotten along with and I've traveled with people who I've gotten along with and then it turns out that they're terrible travel companions. You, thankfully, are a fantastic travel companion.
Thank you.
Yeah. So anyway, so you said to me, I think that the actual thing you should say is the only way to tell if you love or hate someone is to make a game with them. Or, you know, work with them. And that is absolutely true. So here's the thing. That's like, you know, that people always talk about, like, living... Like, if you have a roommate situation in college, for example, you know, you go to college and people are like, oh, we're friends, let's all live together. And people always say, don't live with your friends because you know your friends from how the little time you hang out with them. You don't know what they're like in their homes, how they live, things like that, you know? So... That's a true test. And that's basically the same thing that it boils down to with making a game together. So we'll start off by talking about I have a question for you, first of all.
Mm-hmm.
You have more experience working on collaborative projects than I do. You've worked with other people. Have you worked with anyone who you were friends with on other projects?
I mean, that's a hard way of putting it. Like, I was, when I wanted to work for Dave, like, initially, like, I was like, I like what this guy does. You know, I want to make those, I want to make the sort of graphics that suit the sort of games that he makes. So, like, I got on MSN and I just every single day I was like, hey man, how you going? And just like, this is what I'm working on. Cause I was like, this is 2009, 2010 when I was like, I was making stacks and stacks of stuff. I was just like, I was hungry for it. You know, I'd really decided this is what I want to do. And so like every single day I was talking to Dave and like we became friends pretty quick cause we liked the same stuff. He likes RPGs, you know, and you know, so we were friends before I really worked for him, but not to the, like, we hadn't traveled together, we hadn't, you know, anything like that, but we were still friends.
Right.
So, yeah, you know, and I pretty much talk to Dave every morning. He gets up really early, and I'm just winding down for the day, and we sort of discuss what I've done, but mostly, you know, we just talk life.
Right, sure.
You know, and I have to say, everyone I've worked with in other jobs, pretty much always become friends with them anyway. But yeah, like I'd worked with Sebastian. I worked with Sebastian a lot, and he and I were like, we were good friends. I worked with Captain Nemo, and he and I genuinely good mates. We love the same sort of stupid jokes, and we love the same sort of games. And it's weird because Nemo and I became friends because like he was on IRC one day, and he was like basically criticizing something I'd worked on, and. You know, I was there and I was like, okay, you know, I'll listen. And he was like, oh man, thanks for listening. Like, that's cool that you're willing to listen. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I'd be an idiot if I didn't take valuable feedback into consideration. So he and I basically became friends by him picking on something I was doing. I was like, well, how do you think it could be better? You know, I've always been that sort of guy that can, like, you know, I used to, when I was picking beta testers for my own stuff, I'd find the person that complained the most. I'm like, well, that's the guy I need. Because the quiet ones don't tell you anything. They're not useful beta testers.
Yeah.
So, and I've worked with Ken. Ken did sound stuff for me. So, yeah, I've worked with a bunch of friends, but not... our situation was a little... I guess it was a little different.
It was... I would say our situation...
With Dave, it's always been more of an employer-employee situation for professional stuff, and then the conversation we have as friends afterwards are sort of standalone to that. If Dave tells me to do something, I do it. Right. And I might say, oh, I think it might work better like this. It might work better like that, but he's my boss, so I do what I'm told.
Right. Yeah, I think our situation is a little bit different because we...
both employees.
Yeah.
There was no employer-employee situation
right.
there.
Right, right, right. But there was something else I was going to ask about, which was... okay, well, obviously we're not going to name names, but I've seen... The point I want to get to is I've seen, like... There have been collaborations that I've seen in the AGS community where it seems like, oh, these people are going to make more games and they're going to, you know, they work well together. And then they don't make any more games. And I've found out in a couple of cases that they are no longer on speaking terms for whatever reason. And I don't know if that's because of making games or personal issues or whatever. But, yeah. So, you know, it's... It can go both ways.
I mean, I work with Steve Poulton.
I said not to name names.
But no, because there was no falling out or anything like that, really. But we had, like, we started talking to each other because we wanted to make games together. That was the basis for our conversations together. Right. And, like, you know, when we stopped making games together, we sort of, it's not that we didn't have anything to talk to. Anything to talk about much. It's just there was, you know, we still talk like now and then, but it wasn't like with the same sort of constancy as it was because we'd sort of moved on and we had other projects.
Right.
Yeah. There was no before, yeah, but yeah, Steve and I were good friends and, you know, we talked a lot because we were making games and that was our thing that we had in common. But we like different music, we like different films, we like different books. It was only really the games that brought us together.
Right.
You know, I still like the guy.
Yeah, fair enough. The thing, too, is, like, I think I guess it's a different situation if you kind of if you work with someone because you have that passion in common of games, and you're not really like on a more personal level, you're not necessarily friends. Maybe it'll be a little easier because you're a little bit more civil, I guess, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and absolutely. Like we're very
I'm pretty honest.
I come out with it.
Yeah, you do, and I mean, like, you and I are both pretty honest people, and we both say what's on our minds, and, like, well, you do. It takes a little bit to get it out sometimes. Like, you've picked on me for waffling, when it's true, I do that a lot.
Yeah, you like to preface things, you like to slowly introduce the point, whereas I just come out with it. Yeah,
exactly. And so, but in a way, that helped, because, like, you and I had a strong friendship. Well, have a strong friendship. I don't want to past tense it.
It's all
broken! Oh, no! We have a strong friendship, so, you know, we can, like, you don't make any bones about things. Like, if I do something that's crappy, you'll tell me, and, you know, you won't be nice about it. You won't sugarcoat it. And that's okay, you know, because I know that that's how you are, and I know that, you know, I know to take criticism from you and whatever, and I might fight back and I might get all defensive like I do, and I might feel like I'm being attacked or whatever, but I get over it, and, you know, we get to it and we move on. And that communication, I think, is very integral in not only a team setting, but if you're working with your friends. Because, you know, if you're friends with somebody and you've maybe never seen how they work and how they are under pressure, you don't know how they react. So if you think, oh my god, I thought we were friends, why is he yelling at me, why is he being so mean to me, when you're just, like, you know, giving me criticism, and you know, someone else interprets it as you're just being mean to them, I think that is it's very easy for that to get in the way and ruin your personal relationship as well as your professional one.
Well, I would start by saying that if somebody's yelling, then they've got the wrong idea.
Well, you know, I don't
yell at you. I've never yelled at you. I've never yelled at anybody that I've worked
yelling
with.
Yelling is the wrong word. I don't mean actually yelling. I just mean being frank, being brutally honest, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I mean, the other week I'd said some things to you and you said to me, I'm not sure what you expect of me. And I said what the truth is, which is that I expect a lot from you, just like I expect a lot from myself. I consider you an intelligent person. I wouldn't have wanted to make a game with you if I thought you were stupid, because right, that would be stupid of me. I don't think I'm stupid, so right, why would I want to work with somebody that's stupid? So when you do something that I'm like, oh, I don't know, I don't understand why you thought that was a good idea or anything like that, I need to tell you what I think of that. I'm going to tell you straight out, because I think you're a smart person, and I think that you know that you're a smart person and that you can do better. So if I think you can do better, I'm going to tell you. It's not trying to go, you're an idiot, because why would I have worked with an idiot?
No, of course not. And as I've said, I don't feel like you personally have ever made me feel like an idiot or purposefully set out to make me feel stupid or anything like that. I just, you know, for me, the way I am, I have my own insecurities and my own personal roadblocks that make me feel frustrated sometimes if I'm not getting something right, but, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway,
It is frustrating when you think you've done something well.
Yeah.
And people don't agree with you.
Right, yeah. The other thing I was going to say, too, is, you know, if you're working with someone who you're close with and you don't have that comfort where you... it really just boils down to communication. Because if you're working with someone that you're friends with and you're afraid to hurt their feelings or whatever, and you hold back on telling them something because you're afraid it'll hurt their feelings, and it ultimately hurts the project, that is, you know, that's detrimental as well.
Delivery is everything.
Yeah, absolutely, it is. It is. I mean, obviously, like you said, you're not going to go and say, you stupid idiot, why did you do this?
Yeah, it's like when people, it always reminds me when people get divorced and like, oh, I hate you, everything like that. Mm. You don't, why would you have married the person if you didn't like them? You obviously liked them.
Right.
You know, but stuff happened.
Yeah,
you know, stuff
sure
happens sometimes. And sometimes, you know, you've had a bad day, you've been working on a thing for 2 weeks, and then someone's like, oh, we got to cut that. And you're like, well, I just wasted 2 weeks. I've disappointed the people that I respect, mm-hmm. and they're in my team. I've disappointed myself because I thought I did well, and now I find out that it's not good enough. Of course you're emotional.
Sure. I had an experience exactly like that on Shardlight. You know, I'm not going to get too into detail, but yeah, there was a point where, well, I have to get into detail, but there was a point where Dave brought on a narrative consultant because he said, well, you know, these characters need some work. And I agreed with him and I thought it would be a good idea, but I also felt like, oh my God, I've let everyone down. I didn't do my job correctly. So now he has to spend extra money to bring in someone else, to pay someone else to clean up my mess, and I'm letting everyone down. And yeah, so.
Yeah, I think when you get emotional like that, one thing for me that I learned, because it was hard for me first off when I was drawing, when I'd done stuff for myself, you know, it was always up to my standard. But right. when I started drawing for other people, it wasn't always up to their standard. And like, I found that sometimes if I'd been called out on something that wasn't good enough, I'd get emotional. Mm-hmm. And instead of replying straight away, like instead of emailing them straight back and go, oh, blah, 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 I'd step away and I'd think about it and I'd let it sit. Because mm-hmm. instead of going with the emotional response, I'd sit there and I'd think, okay, well, why have they said that? Obviously, there's a reason that they've said that. Everything else that I've done, they've liked. Mm-hmm. So I got to do something, you know. And if you give yourself time to cool off, you avoid that knee-jerk reaction.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's really easy for arguments and frustrations and upset things to happen when you try to respond to criticism when you're still emotionally attached to the piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, yeah. But, again, and also there's different ways of presenting things. You know, we clashed more than I've clashed pretty much with anybody when working with somebody when we did show. Like, I remember when I got to the end of it, I was like, dude, you're a complete pain in the ass.
Yeah.
Like, because it's true.
Well, I mean, I am.
But I mean, that's the thing is that I can tell you that.
Yeah. I mean, and I had my share of frustrations with you, too. And I told you, I told you that, and, you know, it's fine.
Yeah. And
so
we never really argued. There was points. No. There are points where I'm like, okay, this guy's not listening to me. One time I told you a thing 3 times and I had to email you back and go, look, I've said this. I've listened to your response to everything like this. Now I've said it. You're going to do it my way because I'm sick of trying to convince you. This is my art. Do it how I bloody will say it. Like, that's sometimes, but like, I know Kelsey said something to me once and I really took this advice to heart and I think this has really helped me. When you're in a confrontation with someone, it doesn't have to be an angry confrontation. Just you've said something, they don't agree and you're trying to work it out. A lot of times, if you start using you statements, it's really accusatory sounding.
Mm-hmm.
And she said to me, use I statements. Instead of going, you've done this, or you didn't do that, say, well, I feel this could be better. You know, I don't believe that this is what our game needs. Right. So I try and use that all the time. And I genuinely make it a point of consciously trying to do that, because it's true. I don't want to accuse someone of going, you didn't do your job. You're not smart. You're an idiot. You know, I don't want to do that. Right. I want to put across my opinion. That's all I'm trying to do. I don't want anyone to feel like an idiot.
No, of course not.
I'm just trying to voice my opinion on a project. So I really, having a sort of a conscious focus on your approach to stuff, you know, and I know I'm pretty blunt. I'm pretty honest. If I don't like something, I'll say I don't like it. You know, mm-hmm. I know there's parts in Shardlight where I played a bit, I'm like, oh, we could totally cut that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, you know, I don't mean it like this is all crap, it needs to go. What mm-hmm. I mean is like, at this point, this isn't adding anything meaningful. It really needs something else in order to keep it punchy,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, presentation and approach is very important. But also I think,
well, it's really communication, important to listen. Like I said, yeah. Communication and being clear. A big problem that we had was, since I was coming from the back, and I've mentioned this before, since I came from a background where I was used to doing everything, and I was used to, you know, doing preliminary design documents, and my design documents were very sparse because I would write stuff down so that I could remember them, or remember things, and, you know, kind of build as I went. And So I kind of approached Shardlight from that project without really thinking about other people and them taking that information. So when Dave asked me to do a world Bible, you know, I wrote down a world Bible as I would read it, being like the only person, with the mentality of me being the only person reading it. So it wasn't very detailed. And same with like the room sketches. Like I would sketch out the rooms somehow thinking, okay, well, I know what this would look like if I painted it, but obviously not thinking, well, someone else has to look at this and decide and figure out what it all means. So you would ask me to label exits and hotspots and important things, and I would get frustrated because I was like, well, okay, I'll do it. But then also I was like, but it's in the build. And you were like, but I'm not going to play the build to get to the thing. And I was like, but we... Ah! So, you know, that was silly, but... That's...
Yeah, my point was... My point really was is that sometimes I don't know what the gameplay is going to be.
Right.
Even when playing a build, I can't really grasp from a placeholder puzzle goes here thing.
Right, yeah.
You know, I really... It's like... It's really important to give clear information. There was times that I painted a thing and, you know, you hadn't done stuff and you're like, oh, but you need to have a thing there. I'm like, well, if you told me that at the start, I would have done it completely different. Can you please tell me these things? You know, it's, if you don't have clear information, if you don't give clear information to the people that you're working with, it'd be like if I provided you graphic stuff without any instruction on how to put them in or any clear thing. I always do my best to make sure that when I give an animation or something like that, it's really easy to put in a game. Because I've programmed games. I know how much it sucks to try and fiddle with an animation and get it right.
Mm-hmm.
You know? You try and make it clear. So I expect, like, I expect the same, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just, again, it's clear communication. But also, it's really important to listen. Like, really, listening is... I know listening sucks because everyone else is wrong but you, but, you know, it is, it's a really, it's, that's what teamwork is. And, I think, I don't think it's so much you and I, but I think there's a point where conversations get to the point where you're not actually listening to the other person's ideas. You're waiting for them to finish talking so you can go, okay, well, this is my idea now.
Yeah.
That's not working as a team.
No.
That's trying to have your say. That's all that is.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I mean, it was interesting for me because I guess I'd come off working with James on Technobabylon, and James has the patience of an absolute saint. He's incredible. Dave, there was one point Dave said to him, like, I need you to cut this and add a whole new thing. And James just went, okay. Like, he just took it on board. It was actually kind of surprising, you know. Mm. And even Dave was like, oh, I can't believe he's taking it so well. But there was times on Shardlight where... I remember even Dave said to me once, he's like, man, can you back me up on this? Because I'm trying to get through to Francisco and he's just not getting it. And I was like, okay, I'll send him an email. Because I actually said this to him 2 months ago and, like, you know, he wants to have it his way, but we got to... You and I both agree that it should be this other way. And sometimes, you know, when you've got that difficulty in... communication, and you've said to me that you sometimes feel people need to be direct and you have trouble understanding things if people aren't very direct with you. So I try and make it a point now of just telling you straight out if something's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if with some people, if you try and pussyfoot around the issue, they don't get it. They don't, you know, they don't understand what you're trying to tell them. So just tell them. Give them the chance to accept the information clear.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, it depends. I mean, you know, the reason we got to this point, and we know that, is because we talked about it, you know. So,
yeah.
you have to, in order to solve conflicts, you just have to talk them out, really.
I think also the other thing is stepping back when you're emotional, when you're frustrated. There was a point right in the middle of thing where I'm like, I just need my weekends to myself, you know?
Yeah.
Because if I didn't have that time, then I was always thinking about the game. And when you're in a sort of, when you're in a tough time in a game, you don't want to be thinking about it. You want to have a couple of days just to unwind.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
And I even said to you, like, don't talk to me about the game on the weekends. Just leave it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I was coming from working on a Golden Wake, which was freelance, and I had to learn to take weekends. And when I did, and I realized that what you were saying was absolutely true, I was like, oh man, yeah, this makes things a lot better, because thinking about it on weekends was just getting it was too much, you know.
It's you get sick of anything. You get absolutely sick if you hear the greatest song in the world 4,700 times over and over. You're like, I just want to hear something different.
From tell that to my neighbor.
But yeah, it's like. So for me, it's really important that I take my weekends and, you know, sometimes I still even draw on the weekends. Like, it doesn't matter. But when I get to, like, people talk about Monday-itis, like, they get to work on Monday, like, oh, it's Monday work. I have the absolute opposite. Mondays, I'm super excited to start work on the game. Like, I am every single, Mondays are always my best day. Really? Because I've built up 2 days of energy and I just, It's always like that.
Yeah, I feel the same way, actually. I mean, maybe not as strongly as you do, but yeah, I'm always eager to get back to things on Monday. Like, I'm like, alright, cool, I've had the weekend to rest, now the creative juices are gonna flow again, and I'm gonna do some really cool stuff.
Yeah, like, and that's like, I think that's really important. So, like, if I, you know, and because we're friends, you wanted to talk on the weekends as well, which is cool, but then you were talking about game stuff, and I'm like, oh, dude, I had to think about that all week, and last weekend, because you wouldn't shut up about it last weekend. Just, can you give me a weekend without thinking about the game? Because that was really what it was. I couldn't unwind.
Right. And I just got an email. Yeah, I was going to talk about that point, too. Like, it's very important, like you said, it's really easy to get caught in that trap where you just can't stop thinking about anything else or talking about anything else but your game. And you need to step back, especially if you're working with your friends, because obviously you're going to want to talk to them on your off time. And like that, if you talk to them about the game, it's really not fair that you're not letting them unwind if they need to unwind, like you said. So, yeah, that's an important thing too. And also, it speaks to the fact that, like, you know, if you're working with someone a lot, you might need, I mean, it's perfectly natural that you might not just need to take a break from the game, but you might need to take a break from talking to them too. So, you know, that happens sometimes, and, you know, it's really easy to get worried and be like, oh my god, we had a disagreement about something and now he's not talking to me. Oh my god, what if he hates me? You know,
you're the most insecure person I know. I have to say that, sorry.
That's fine, I know that too.
Like, you turn everything into, like, oh, does he hate me forever? Is he disappointed in me? I'm like, dude, just seriously relax. It takes a lot.
I know that.
Really upset.
I had this really big phobia the whole time that I was letting you and Dave down, like, constantly. But, you know, that's just my own issues, and, you know, I have to deal with them in my own way. But, yeah. But no, I mean, you know, but that being said, you and Dave have always been very supportive, and, you know, and you've dealt with me, so that's good.
Yeah, I mean that's the other thing, is like, when you're frustrated with someone, don't take it out on them, because half of it's probably your fault. Like, in my case, I've probably been animating all week, and, you know, I'm worn out, and, like, you know, it's a lot of work, and now I'm just like, I'm trying to relax, and someone's like, oh, you don't think I did this right, well, what can I do to make it better? I'm like, I just don't want to talk about that now. And you're like, but what can I do? I'm like, just give me a second. Like, I've got my own job, you know? Like, that's the other thing. But that doesn't mean that the other person is trying to annoy you. It's just, sometimes you're just having a bad day and you don't want to talk about a thing. And it's okay to say, can we talk about this later? I think it's really powerful to say, to just go, look, I'm not ready to talk about this right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Give me a couple of days.
That reminds me, there used to be this old commercial back in, like, the late 90s or something for headache medicine or something, aspirin. And the thing was this, the lady says to her mother or something, I know you have a headache, but don't take it out on me. And I just remember that fun. And it made me laugh. Commercials are dumb.
And my least favorite thing is arguing. It always has been. I really dislike arguing. Dude, this is the job I want to do forever. Why am I having arguments about it? But when you're passionate about a thing, and there's a thing that we should talk about, is that your ideas aren't perfect and sometimes you're wrong. It's true for everybody.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And another thing I want to point out too, and we've actually had we've had words about this, is the difference between an argument and a discussion.
I will say this. The worst thing you can say when someone says, I don't want to have this argument, is we're not having an argument. That is the absolute... That and I've said this to you when you said it to me. That is... Because that is the most argumentative thing you can say.
Well, that's that just goes back... Yeah, that just goes back to what you said before about changing you statements to I statements. And it's true. Like, if you're having an argument and you say... Rather than say, we're not having an argument, the better way to say would be like, well, I don't feel that we're arguing.
You don't have to say like that. You just say, I don't want to argue with you.
Right.
That's all you have to say.
Right.
You don't have to say, we're not doing the thing that you just said that we don't want to do. That's like going, I'm not yelling!
Right. Right.
If someone says to you, I don't want to have this argument right now, you say, well, I don't want to have an argument either.
Mm-hmm.
That's all you got to say. You don't have to say, you know, it, because even if you don't think you're having an argument, if they think that they're having an argument, then it's an argument, in their opinion.
Right. Yeah, it's just about respecting people's opinions, too. But I mean, see, to me, personally, argument has the connotation of aggressive and yelly and you know, no one's listening and we're just yelling at each other to hear each other talk and nothing's really getting resolved. Whereas a discussion is more civil and, you know, ideas are being communicated and whatever. So,
But if you bring a pedantic point, like, if you know, it's I understand what you're saying.
It's semantics.
But if you do that sort of thing when someone says, I don't want to have an argument about this, then you're being argumentative.
That's the wrong time to do it. Yes.
Yeah, it's not because you're really stoking the fire. Believe me.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like you're just like, well, I'm clearly not getting through to this person because they're not listening to me.
Right.
That's how it feels. But yeah, it's how do we get onto this?
I don't know.
Discussion. But yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, sometimes you have your ideas and it's important to have your own ideas, but also it's important to say, okay, I'm relaxed. The other person might not be so relaxed. It's time for me to listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So I guess basically what we're trying to say is don't be put off working with your friends on game projects if you want to do that. It can be a fun and rewarding experience. I mean, for all
Oh my god, what are you, a fucking third grade teacher?
A fun and rewarding experience. Fuck you!
Look, here's the thing. It's going to suck. Making games always sucks at some point. Because it's making games, if it was easy, everyone would do it. They don't. Yeah. It's gonna suck. Don't take it out on the people you care about.
Exactly. And you know, in the end, even if you have clashes and even if you have discussions or arguments or whatever, and even if you think, oh my god, what a pain in the ass, but you know, this has been a terrible experience. Well, hopefully it doesn't get to that point. But in the end, as long as you have, you know, you have something to show for it. All those, I mean, I'm biased in saying this, but I think Shardlight's pretty good. I mean, I wouldn't say this if I didn't think it was true. I always said, you know, you always said that you felt like I always believed in the project, and I told you recently I didn't necessarily always believe in the project. I always believed that it could be something really good. And I think that it has become that something really good that I wanted it to be. But it took a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, to be cliche again. You know, it wasn't an easy project. But I think that, you know, looking back on it and playing the game, I think this is something really good. You know, we worked together and we made this. I don't think, oh my god, I remember when we were working on this scene, we had this difference of opinion on this, and oh my god, I honestly don't remember
painting half the scenes. Like, yeah, I look back now, I'm like, oh right, I forgot I did that.
Right, exactly.
So, all those little details get lost in the mix, sort of thing.
Exactly. And the important thing is that we have a final product that is good, and you know, and that
you're going to like the wrap up. I can hear it. But there's something else I want to say. Is if you're working with somebody and you don't ever disagree with them, or even if you're just talking to them and you don't disagree with them, then how fucking weak is that?
Yeah.
Don't you have opinions? Don't you have ideas? Like,
well, that goes back to what I said earlier about being afraid to hurt people's feelings and not expressing how you actually feel. Like, the worst thing you can do is be complacent and not say how you're feeling because you're worried that the other person's going to get upset. You know?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, even if someone asks you for an opinion and you're like, oh, I mean, I know I'm guilty of this. You know, I've asked you, like, hey, can you tell me what you think about this thing? And, you know, you'll be like, well, I don't want to tell you because you'll get upset, because I know that you have gotten upset about this sort of thing in the past, so I don't want to get you upset and start an argument or whatever. So don't do that. Just, you know, establish an open line of communication with the person you're working with and understand that you're not always going to have nice things to say to them. Because it's true.
Yeah, and if you ask somebody for feedback, don't expect that they're going to give nice feedback.
Exactly. If you go in, and trust me, I've done this, if you go in asking for feedback and you get upset when they tell you the truth, you weren't going in looking for feedback. You were going in looking for validation.
Praise. You're looking for praise.
Exactly. And that is, like, not the right way to do it.
I talk to a lot of, well, not a lot of, but a selection of more experienced artists than myself, mm-hmm. you know, or more skilled artists, even if not more experienced, because who's made more adventure games than I have? That's the cockiest thing I've said all minute.
Let me ask you a quick question as a quick aside. All those, that thing that you put together, were those all released projects, or were those just things? Okay.
Just different projects I've worked on and spent time on. There were a bunch that never made it in there. I didn't put in the Smiley Face game. I didn't put Mildred in there. I didn't Tethered Fate in there. There was a bunch that never made it in, but I'm like, oh, I got these other things.
You had, like, there was like 40-something screens in there, and I remember one time we sat down and we, like, counted all the games we had done, and we were pretty on the same level. But I guess,
what are you doing? But see, I didn't count my Ocean Spirit Genesis and all our games and shit like that. It's just,
I didn't count my Hour games either. But I don't know. I thought I had made a lot more games, because when I saved all my screenshots, I was like, shit, there's only like 20 something. I thought I had made way more than these. But anyway,
what are you doing with your life?
Making long games.
Yeah. But yeah, like when I show my stuff to people. Mm-hmm. I'm showing it to people that I know are better than me, because I want them to tell me why it's bad.
Yeah, well, at this point
in my career, I get, you know, I read a review and people go, the graphics were nice, and I'm like, well, okay, but that doesn't help me improve. When I'm showing it to people, I don't want them to tell me it's nice, because I just read a review. Not to sound cocky or anything like that, but that's not what I'm asking for that interaction. I'm looking for guidance. Right. If I'm showing people artwork that I did, it's either, you know, showing it to someone to sort of say, hey, look at this thing I've been working on, you might be interested. Or, you know, can you look at this? I know that you know more about art than I do. Can you, you know? And I'm hoping that they'll go, oh, dude, you did that totally wrong. Because there's so many times where people have gone, oh, why didn't you do that? I've done it. I've gone, oh, are you kidding me? That looks so much better. I'm an idiot. And you learn by putting yourself out there and letting yourself get hurt, because it hurts to do it wrong. Of course, it sucks to be bad. Like, are you kidding me? No one likes doing something wrong. But if you find out why it's wrong and you allow yourself to listen to sort of why a thing could be better, then of course you're going to get better, because that's how you learn.
Remind me to talk to you about something of this point after we're done.
Okay.
Sorry, trolls. Trolls doesn't What's like it. Trolls? Trolls fell down in a ditch and busted his lip. He's a moron. I love you, Trolls, but you're a moron.
We all knew that.
Yeah. Anyway,
I used to play a game called Put Moron. When one of my friends had a piece of, like, he'd have like sliced meat for lunch, like cold beef and tomato sauce, mm-hmm. like ketchup, I guess, for the rest of the world, and I'd go put more on it, and he'd put more sauce on it, and I'd just keep saying put more on it until he just had all sauce and like this tiny little bit of meat, and that's why the game was called Put More On, because he was a moron for listening to me and I was a moron for doing it to him.
That sounds like the best worst game ever. It's almost as bad as it was the game I invented called Cup Cup.
There you go.
Anyway, do you have anything else to say?
Yeah, it's gonna suck, but you can. I was saying this to when I was down the Perth Games Expo. It was weird because I was like, everyone else was like, "Oh yeah, I just finished university. I'm working on my first game," and I was like, "Haha." And I just said to them, "Like, they're like, oh, what's it like?" I'm like, "It's the best job in the world, and some days it just fucking sucks."
Yeah,
and that's true. You know,
I really see a lot of that too. Yeah.
I love doing this, but there's some days it just sucks. And what I say to myself, I'm like, well, at least, you know, this is a tough animation and it's looked bad for 3 hours and it's just not working. I'm sick of trying to get it right, but at least I'm not picking sheep up. Like, you know, for me, I've done enough shit jobs that I can say that,
sure.
You know, I don't know what it's like for people that came from a really good job into doing this stuff like me.
Yeah. Yeah, man, and I'm the same. I'm like, you know, oh man, I just can't get this story beat right, or like I've been trying to draw this and it doesn't look good or whatever, but hey, at least I'm in my underwear in my apartment and not in a stupid office for 8 hours not eating, talking about stupid insurance fraud.
Yeah, and like even some days like you've had a big weekend and you're like, oh, I don't want to get out of bed. Like, you know, I'm like, hang on a minute. I used to get out of bed at 4:30 in the morning to go and pick sheep up. Why the hell aren't I getting out of bed early for the job I do love? Get out, asshole.
Exactly. And then you go out into the cold and you're like, oh no.
The cold, dude. Do you know where I live?
I know, well, it gets frosty sometimes.
It does. Yeah, it does.
It was pretty cold in the mornings when I was there.
As soon as we finish this podcast, I'm going to go get another Zupa Dupa. I'm getting dry.
Then we should wrap up. All right, so don't, like I said before, it's not necessarily a cautionary thing. Don't be afraid to take on projects with your friends. Don't think that just because, I mean, obviously it depends on a case by case basis, but don't think that just because you make a project or you work on a game with your friends that you're instantly gonna become enemies by the end of it. I mean, sometimes that happens, but you know, so a lot of times it doesn't. You know, you and I, we're still BFFs, right?
I think,
right?
Right?
Sorry.
Don't cry. I always kind of knew that we'd be mates coming out of it, even if we pissed each other off, because, like,
honestly, I was never concerned that we were gonna, you know, like, it's funny, because I got a letter from someone the other day, and I had told him in a previous communication how we had finished Shardlight, and we had come out of it, and we hadn't killed each other, and they said, oh, I was genuinely concerned that the beautiful friendship was going to be ruined by this. And I was like, oh, fuck off.
I mean, there were times where it's just like, oh, just not now. Just, you know, but that's,
of course.
That's,
but that's
always
natural.
You know?
That's always.
And
that's
the thing is, the thing again is, like, if you've got that sort of thing with other people, like with just the employee-employer thing, you don't see them every day, so it's easy to put up with them once a week.
Exactly.
You know? Exactly. And, like, I'm very lucky working with Dave, because I know what some designers can be like, and I'm like, oh, I'm just glad that I don't have to deal with that. Like, you know, Dave's the most, he's like the most easygoing guy imaginable. I can't believe, like, you know, he's just like, oh yeah, he does his thing, and he lets me do my thing, and most of the time, he's like, yeah, that's great, and puts it in, and sometimes he's like, oh, you gotta redo that. I'm like, oh shit, I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
You know, I never, but like, yeah, that's, I'm very lucky that the whole time I've been working, like for all of the Wedged Eye stuff that I've been working on, it's been pretty easy. And like,
the main reason I think
we had problems is like, you didn't want to disappoint anybody. And so like, as soon as somebody was like, oh, this could be different, you were like, oh, I got to defend my ideas to prove how good I am.
Yeah.
And like, we're like, oh, just,
it was, you know, it was my growing pains from working as a team, but you know, I learned, hopefully came out stronger for it. You know, I was the weakest link in the chain, but hopefully I wasn't so weak that it all came crashing down. So,
well, I mean, we got the game finished. That says a lot. Like, you know, if you can, it took around a year all up.
Yeah.
Of my time, anyway. It took, which is the longest I've ever worked on a game, and you know, it was the most intensive thing, and there was a pause in the middle. It was all, it was different to anything I'd ever worked on before. And like I said, like, when you don't get away on the weekends, you're like, you're always constantly got this thing simmering, even if you've like, you know, so take breaks, give yourself time to be a human being again. You're not just making games. There's a lot more to it than that. And like, if I get frustrated with someone, usually, it's, like I said, it's because I respect their intelligence and I expect intelligent people to do intelligent things. And if they do something, I'm like, oh, that's way short of my expectations for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's when I get like, ugh, come on, what are you doing, man? You know,
yeah,
it's that simple. Like I said, why would I have chosen to work with anybody? Like, it's funny, all the stuff I've worked on for Way to Die Games so far, you know, I did, obviously, Epiphany, and I did Deception, that, but it's all been stuff that I chose to work on. You and I chose to work on Shardlight before Dave had caught wind of the project.
Yeah.
He picked that up himself. Techno Babylon, I'd started on that before Dave knew it was a thing. Mm-hmm. You know, and the Way to Die stuff, obviously, I applied to work with Dave. Like, I'd be an idiot if I signed up to work for him and didn't like his games. Like, I loved the Black Pearl series and the Shiver before I ever started working with him. So, like, you know, I've always... It's cool because every project I've worked on, I've never had, like... I've never had a point where I'm like, oh, I'm doing this because it's my job.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, like, the project I'm working on with now with Dave is a project that he and I have discussed for years. Mm-hmm. Doing something like of that style, and like the only time it was a little bit like that is when there was rumors of us maybe working on Vertigo imprint stuff with Constantine, and that was one day of my life, and I it's really weird, but that one day was stressful, and I even said to Dave, like, oh, I'm not keen for this because Warner Brothers, and like there's going to be stupid targets, there's going to be stupid deadlines, it's going to suck, and like I'm pretty glad that it never happened. I mean, it would have been fucking amazing to work on that. But, like I said, like, Shardlight's the game that you and I wanted to make. Techno Babylon, I'd played the first three games, and I'm like, I want to fucking make this. The Black World games, I'd played the other games in the series, and I'm like, dude, I want to work with you. Like, that's... I've been very fortunate that every project I've worked on has been a dream project. Yeah. So, you know, like, I imagine it would be different if you're like, I want to make games, and you end up making, like, slot hippos or some, like, solid shit like that, you know?
Well, like you said, same with me. Like, you know, the two projects that I've worked on with Way to Die have been, you know, I've had complete creative freedom, really.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I might have to change some things here and there, but ultimately it's not like I have some corporate bigwig coming in, even though Dave always likes to joke about executive meddling, but it's not like I have someone who comes in and who's like, nope, your main character needs to be we need it to target this demographic, so your main
with Dorito for a mouth.
Yeah, your character needs to have a box of Raisin Bran for a head.
But
ultimately, my next project...
You
listen
to some of the big studio stories, and it's just a nightmare. You can see why people crack under the pressure.
Exactly. And even still, it's like, you know, afterwards, it's like, you know, it's not like Dave's like, well, I'm going to put you on this project, and you're going to have to do this, and this, and this, and you have to come up with something. No, it's like, well, I have this idea. You want to see it? And he's like, yeah, sure. And then he, you know, gives me feedback, and if he wants to go forward, okay, but I don't know yet, because I haven't heard from him. But, yeah, you know, it's not like... It's not... It could be a lot different, and it could be a lot worse, and it's not, you know, as bad as it might seem sometimes, it's really just... But this is not general advice, this is specific to us, but I'm going off on a tangent. But the point is, ultimately, what you can take away from this is just listen, communicate, don't be afraid to, you know, to hurt people's feelings. Obviously, don't be an asshole when you tell them things, but... But yeah, and on the other side too, don't be afraid to take criticism. Don't feel like people are attacking you, you know.
Yeah, it's not a sort of showcase. Don't be afraid, like, if your pride feels like it's getting wounded. That doesn't matter. Your pride's it's not about your pride. It's about being the best you can be, in my opinion.
Sometimes,
and having a good time.
Yeah. Sometimes you think that something you've come up with, like you said, is amazing, and, you know, it just doesn't work, and if you're you have to let it go. As long as you don't compromise your vision, that's the important thing. And it's very, very difficult to compromise your vision unless, like, your main character gets changed into a can of Mountain Dew. Unless you were trying to make Mountain Dew Quest. That could be a thing. But yeah, anyway. I think we've talked enough, and I'm getting
hungry. No, please, go on.
No. All right, if you want to hear us ramble about more shit, follow us on Twitter. I'm at @GrindusLoveGames.
I'm at @Ben_304, and together we are at @BCT_podcast.
Cool.
And thank you to Stuart Moore for your question. I don't know if we answered it, but
we tried. I think we did. See, what would have been funny there is if you had said, no, we didn't, and then I said, yes, we did, and we got into a big argument at the end of the show.
Listen, I'm not the argumentative one in this relationship.
Oh. But you know the whole reason I asked you if we were still BFFs? Not just for superficial confirmation, but because I get to play this song.